Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. Back in the house. You are now talking with TD. I am Terron Davenport. And we have a very exciting show for you. We're going to give you two times the No Flags film. Yes, you guys know him as No Flags film on social media. His name is James Foster, so we're going to bring him in. Got to talk offense, got to talk defense. He breaks it down like no other, so we're going to get into that. And then we're going to talk a little Ryan Tannehill with Chris Sanders, Forever Titans wide receiver. So I'm excited about this show, and without further ado, we're going to go right to James Foster, No Flags film. James, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. I appreciate you coming on. And I guess, you know, before we get into the offense, because I know a lot of people are curious, how did you get into doing everything that you do at this level? You know, because your film breakdowns are excellent. I really respect your work that you do. The fans obviously love it. So just give them a little background.
Yeah, it actually all started probably, I would say, 2016 or 2017, kind of when the debate about whether Marcus Mariota was the guy was kind of ramping up. And you know how, I mean, pretty much everyone is when it comes to debating sports with your friends, like you want to have a strong opinion and you want to be right. But I'm sitting there like the broadcast angle doesn't even show past 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea what's going on. So I just started, you know, watching all 22, and it was really just a process of seeing something, not knowing what I was looking at, and then going down this long rabbit hole of like trying to learn what cover two was or trying to learn about what slide protection was and all that stuff. And I got to the point where I felt like I knew enough and had an interesting enough perspective to start making film breakdown content.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I respect the fact that you didn't know, but you sought the knowledge. You know what I mean? And that's really good. And I mean, listen, like, you know, I played the sport, you know, and a lot of people say, hey, well, if you didn't play, you're not going to know. I don't fully support that. I do feel that having played, you have certain advantages, just in that you could kind of put yourself in different situations that you're watching. But that doesn't mean that you can't break down the game thoroughly. And you're an excellent example of that. So I wanted to shout you out for that. So that being said,
well, I think if I can make a point about playing, I think that there's a couple things with playing. I think, first of all, like you have a head start, obviously, having played in terms of your football knowledge. And then I also will say that I think from like an individual position technique perspective, I think that having played does give you a significant leg up over someone like me. Like I can sit here and critique a cornerback's back pedal. Right. But not having that muscle memory of like knowing where, you know, when your weight's supposed to be on the balls of your feet and stuff like that, like I'm at a disadvantage from that standpoint.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't really call it a disadvantage, though, because it just allows different perspective. I will put it that way. And I think it's just really good to be able to have that conversation and just have that respect on both angles, you know. And I think that's what the good part about this conversation we're about to have, really, I'm going to just give you the floor and let you run with it. But I'm looking forward to this. And I guess we'll start out at the offense. Todd Downing overall, or actually, no, we're going to go defense first. Pardon me. We're going to go defense first. And we look at Shane Bowen, right, and just how things are so much different from last year statistically. And even schematically, there's a lot of different things. So from your eye, what do you feel overall, broad stroke, is the reason for the turnaround defensively?
Well, I think the first thing that you have to point to is just improved personnel. Mm-hmm. If you look at like across the front four, major upgrades, linebackers have obviously been upgraded. I would say that a cornerback group of Christian Fulton, Elijah Molden, and Jackrabbit Jenkins is an upgrade from last season. And then I think the safeties, I think Amani Hooker has been probably the most underrated player on Tennessee's defense, in my opinion. And I think he's been a massive reason for their success. And then I also think that Kevin Byard, just with a lot better surrounding core, has been able to play a lot more comfortably. They kind of, you know, it's been interesting with Shane Bowen and Mike Vrabel. It's hard to really pin down Mike Vrabel's defensive philosophy, or at least it has been, because like he comes from the Romeo Crennel coaching tree, goes to Tennessee and kind of lets Dean Pease take control of the defense. And, you know, they run man free, cover three, you know, with like the multiple 3-4. And then last year it kind of felt like they were in no man's land, but this year they really have gravitated towards the sort of Brandon Staley, Vic Fangio philosophy, where we're going to line up in split safety pre-snap, give you a light box, try to force you, try to tempt you to run the ball. And then if not, we're in split safety alignment. Our safeties have depth, and so we're kind of immune to play action, you know, because if you just picture a safety, you know, lining up in the box, if they bite on play action, a lot of times they're out of the play. But if they're 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, they bite on play action, they just take one step back and they're back into great position. You know, they lined up in two high safeties pre-snap 63% of the time, which was fifth most often in the NFL. In those situations, they ranked third in EPA per attempt, second in yards per attempt. So they were really successful in that regard. They used lighter boxes, 5 or 6 man boxes, second most often in the NFL, only allowed 3.8 yards per attempt in those situations. So, you know, I think that the fact that their safeties can fit the run from depth, and they've got great personnel across the board, I think that has been the biggest thing schematically.
And that's the key, and I'm glad you brought up the safeties fitting against the run, because when you look at Kevin Byard, you look at Imani Hooker, they are very sound tacklers. And that's another thing that has actually changed from last year. You know, Byard just had that thing with taking bad angles. But you look at this year with this team, I mean, they were second in the league against the run to the Ravens, and it was by like 0.1 yards or something like that, some minute number like that. And a lot of that is because of those safeties. They're able to drop them back in that too high, and they could come up and be sound against the run. So that's a great point there. When you look at the pass rush and the improvement there, to you, is it really as simple as Denico Autry came in, Bud Dupree came in, or what has contributed to the pass rush, just having the explosion that it had?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of I would use an example of just sort of take an imaginary play from last season where you might have Jeffrey Simmons, who would, you know, get 70% of the way there with a bull rush. He would push the pocket a little bit. The quarterback would just sidestep and then continue to survey the field. Or Harold Landry might, you know, speed rush around the edge, and then it just forces the quarterback to step up into a clean pocket. But this season, when Harold Landry's speed rushes around the edge doesn't get all the way there, the quarterback is stepping up into Denico Autry, who's getting 80% of the way there, and Jeffrey Simmons, Bud Dupree. It's kind of like it's not a pass rush like Cleveland's, for example, where you've just got Myles Garrett dominating the left tackle snap after snap. You've just got a bunch of, like, you know, B to B plus pass rushers that are just constantly creating pressure, and it kind of suffocates the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I think also the skill sets of Tennessee's front are very conducive to running stunts, which they run a lot of stunts. I think 18 of their sacks this season came off of stunts and twists. And when you've got a guy like Harold Landry, who I don't really view as the most skilled player from a pass rushing perspective, but he's fast, he has a really high motor. You've got Denico Autry, Bud Dupree. These are all guys that are really perfect scheme fits for that kind of pass rush.
Yeah, yeah, no, you're 100% right. I even like how – now, they don't have to do it, but there are times where they send Elijah Molden on the blitz too, and that helps it out. I want to look at the second level of the defense, though, and you look at David Long and what he's been able to do, he's my favorite player to watch on that defense. You know, I just love the energy that he plays with and just the way that he is. What are your thoughts on the second level of the defense?
I'm a huge David Long fan. I did an article for Broadway Sports talking about like Titan superlatives, and David Long was my appointment viewing player. Like, you know, when I turn on the film on Monday or Tuesday, I kind of like to watch individual players at like each watch through at a time. David Long is always the first player that I go to, just because, I mean, I think the biggest thing with David Long is he's obviously a smaller guy, and so he's going to be at an inherent disadvantage when it comes to taking on blocks. And normally, like, a linebacker coach is going to tell you don't run around blocks, but he has this ability to just kind of, like, juke. I mean, he almost reminds me of LeSean McCoy, like the linebacker version of LeSean McCoy. He's just so shifty.
Yeah.
The way that he's able to sidestep and then bounce right back into position.
Yep.
So it's not bending around the block and sacrificing the angle. It's almost like teleporting from one place to another. And, you know, he has just, you know, a nose for the football. He's really improved his coverage this season. And I think that stretch of him being injured definitely kind of hurt him in terms of national attention and sort of the perspective from that angle. But I think, you know, I think he has a chance to really ascend to be one of the premier linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I love how you make the point about avoiding that block but getting right back on course. That is so true. Yeah. That is so true. So overall, it's pretty obvious the defense has made the improvement. If you had to pick a defensive MVP, who would that be?
I mean, I think it would have to be Kevin Byard. You know, and I was having this, the Trayvon Diggs debate, which we obviously like don't have to get into, but I was contrasting Trayvon Diggs with Kevin Byard. And I was saying, like, if you take out Trayvon Diggs, nine plays or whatever it was that he got an interception, the rest of his tape is not that impressive. If you take out all of Kevin Byard's interceptions, to me, his tape is just as impressive, because if you watch him on a play-to-play basis, he's constantly in the right position, you know, covering up routes over the middle. The Titans run a lot of what's called cover one cross. A lot of people call it one robber, one lurk, where you've got one of the safeties coming down and defending like bender deep over routes from like 3-by-1. And, you know, so he'll come down, he'll be in perfect position on that tight end and force the quarterback into his second read and then slows him down enough to get a sack. Like that sort of thing, stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet that Kevin Byard really impacts the game and, you know, just doesn't give up big plays. I mean, I can think of really two plays off the top of my head that he gave up, that the cover zero against touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins against the Cardinals, and then he had that pass interference against the Colts. Really, other than that, he's just been really solid, adding a lot of positive impact as well.
So that's the defense. We took a look at that. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with James Foster of No Flags Film. Stay tuned. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to freedomtireguys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at freedomtireguys.com.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We got a Too Short, Blow the Whistle. AJ Brown bringing us back as well, because we're going to get into the offense and blow the whistle. You know, my man James Foster, he says No Flags Film, but we're going to blow the whistle on that. We're going to throw some flags right here because we got to get into this offense. And I guess I'll just give you the table, James. What's your take on the offense as far as where they fell short? Let's go there, and we'll go broad stroke again.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about the Bengals' performance from the offense's perspective, and there's not really anyone, any individual player outside of Ryan Tannehill that I would say had a bad game. I mean, Kari Blossom game maybe with the drop, he played, 10 snaps. It's really a difficult pill to swallow with how good the offensive performance was, I thought, outside of Tannehill. I mean, the receivers were creating separation. The pass protection was really good. Derrick Henry didn't seem like he was at 100%, but I think he played okay. And then obviously Deontay Foreman, I thought, played really well. Mm-hmm. So, I would pin the majority of the blame on Ryan Tannehill. I think Todd Downing obviously, deserves criticism, and that debate has kind of about who deserves more. It has kind of run its course. I think the bottom line is that neither of them really performed up to expectations.
No doubt. Well, speaking of Todd Downing, I want to get, where are you with Todd Downing? Where are you with Ryan Tannehill? Because, right, you see this cancellation, at least the attempt to cancel both of those guys. You know what I mean? When it comes to Titans football, where are you on Todd Downing as OC?
I think that the conversation around offensive coordinators and play callers is so hyperbolic. If you were to poll every single fan base, I think there's currently about 15 teams that have the worst offensive coordinator in the NFL, which is pretty amazing. But, I don't think Todd Downing is incompetent or sabotaging the team or anything like that. To me, he's kind of just like a mediocre play caller. I think he does some nice things, especially in the run game. But my sort of philosophy with coordinators is that's that's really the only way to establish an advantage over other teams that doesn't fall under the salary cap. So, anytime you have an opportunity to upgrade an offensive coordinator, I think you do it. And so, I would be on the fire Todd Downing train if there is someone that they think would be an obvious upgrade. But if not, I think that, you keep him around for continuity. But, I would give, just looking at the year holistically, taking into account the injuries that they had, I would give him probably like a C- to D+ for the season.
Yeah, this team was top 10 in red zone scoring, touchdown scoring percentage. They were top 10 in third down conversion percentage. They were top 3, I believe it was, in goal-to-goal situations. So, it's not like the offense just flustered. And I think that's something that we have to realize. But you said something that was interesting to me. And you said if you have the opportunity to upgrade the OC, you do it. Do you see any available upgrades for this Titans team? And mind you, Joe Brady just went to the Bills as their quarterback coach.
Yeah, well, Joe Brady would have been one of the people that I would say, I think that Tim Kelly is a guy that people have floated around. So I would say him. I think that a lot of kind of evaluating coaches, like prospective coaches, I like to leave to the front office because they know what they're looking for in terms of fit and how they would mesh with the team that they have. And it's a lot easier for me from an outsider's perspective to, go on ESPN and sort offense by yards per game and be like, oh, whoever their offensive coordinator is good, but it's like, I really think it's difficult to kind of evaluate play callers in terms of like changing changing what team they're coaching. And so I think that's kind of like above my pay grade. So I just kind of like to evaluate what's in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some cases, the Joes, they supersede the X's and O's, right? And you look at even at Ty Downing, because I would ask him frequently about getting Julio Jones the ball early, getting A.J. Brown the ball early. And he would say he calls the plays, but sometimes the way the defense is or even the way the quarterback reads things, it takes him away from those guys as the first read. So that's something to consider for those of you who said, hey, you know, he doesn't even try to get those guys the ball. It's not always the guy calling the play. It has a lot to do with the opposing team who gets paid also and the guy pulling the trigger. Speaking of that guy pulling the trigger, Ryan Tannehill, are you at a point where it's time to move on, or you feel like this team has to make improvements around him to win?
My position on Ryan Tannehill is kind of – it's essentially that they're in a bad situation, but I don't know that there's a whole lot that you can do about it. The philosophy – from John Robinson, from a team-building perspective, when he made the Julio Jones trade, was that he was saying, okay, this next 2 years is going to be our Super Bowl window, and there's kind of like two established ways to win a Super Bowl. You either have one of these elite top-tier quarterbacks, or you have an above-average competent quarterback, and you try to create a great surrounding core for them and try to win that way. And the Titans were going with that second method, and they were saying, we think that Ryan Tannehill has a shot to get us there. We're going to try to create as explosive of an offensive roster around him and try to make that happen. And I think when you restructure Ryan Tannehill's deal this past offseason, you know, you're saying that Ryan Tannehill is going to be our quarterback for the foreseeable future. And so the fact that his playoff performance was disappointing doesn't change the reality that he's going to be the quarterback. You know, so when you start to talk about like trades for Russell Wilson and and all this stuff, it's like it's great in theory. The main hang up with me is I don't know what team is just dying to trade for Ryan Tannehill at this point.
And that's the thing, James. That's the thing. Last year, the Rams, they had the perfect storm with the Lions. That perfect storm doesn't come along all the time.
Right.
So
yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, and I think the other thing, I think, yeah, what you have to do is I think you just attack offense this offseason. If you look at John Robinson and Mike Vrabel's comments following the game, they – pretty much exclusively like blamed the players, which is a similar tone that they had last season with the defense. And we saw huge personnel changes. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see a lot of changes on the offensive line, definitely tight end. I think the tight end room will look completely different. I think they'll try to add a receiver as well.
Three free agents tight end wise, right? You got Jeff Swaim, you got Anthony Firkser, as well as Michael Pruitt coming off of the injury. Do you have any particular, like maybe give me one or two free agents you would say, like someone were to ask me, I would say David Njoku. Give me a couple that you think.
Well, you stole mine. I was going to say David Njoku. He's, I thought had his best season from a run blocking perspective. I was really – when I watched a couple Browns games on the All-22, and I was impressed with how much better of a blocker he was this season than in previous years. So I would say David Njoku. I would say, you know, Dalton Schultz is another one. I guess the big thing with tight end for me is that it's less important – I don't think it's the right strategy to try to find Travis Kelce or try to find George Kittle. If you can get a tight end that impacts the game that much, that's great, but that's just so rare. And I think that the return on investment of trying to throw like a bunch of, you know, first round picks and all these big free agent, deals at tight ends, I just think that history has kind of shown that you're usually not going to get a good value return on that. I think the important thing with tight end is just being solid. Like you can't run the offense that the Titans want to run with a bunch of 12 personnel and not have good tight ends, because the most important thing is that the defense respects the tight end as a receiver and as a blocker, you know, because that's really the value that the tight end position adds, is that like a defense has that conflict where they say, okay, tight end's coming on the field. If we go into base personnel, we are going to have a slow linebacker on this fast tight end. If we go into nickel, we're going to have a slot corner getting blocked by this strong tight end, right? And so, like, when you have someone who's only a blocker or who's only a receiver, it kind of takes away that conflict. And that's where someone like Jonnu Smith, who wasn't the best blocker, but he was adequate, right?
Right.
And so when Jonnu Smith is on the field and the defense is a nickel, the Titans still have a blocking advantage there. And so I think that's the most important thing. I would also, the last thing I would say on tight end is to watch out for Briley Moore. He was someone that I had as a third-round prospect last season. I thought that just a tenacious run blocker, really fast, has some juice after the catch, really good hands. I hated that he got injured in the offseason, but he's someone that I think could be a sleeper candidate to make an impact.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And he definitely impressed a bit, you know, when he was available as far as watching him in practice. So I like that you mentioned that. Let's shift over and wrap up with the slot receiver. In my opinion, ideally, they would get a guy that could also do some returns. So you kind of get a buy one, get one free. Just in a minute or so, any prospects that you like as far as draft-wise to come in as a person to replace Chester Rogers?
Yeah, well, my big kind of draft crush so far has been Jalen Tolbert out of South Alabama, and I have a beef with South Alabama because they do this thing where they list him on their roster as 6'3", and so I'm watching him and I'm like, wow, this guy is 6'3", moving like that, comes to the Senior Bowl, and he's 6'1". I'm like, how are you lying about 2 inches? And now I've got to sit here and reevaluate everything I've thought about him for the past 2 days. And I'm like, all right, well, would he have made that catch? Like, you know, so I'm kind of reevaluating my thoughts on him, but, you know, really fast, really great at tracking the ball, has a nice release package, played a lot in the slot and outside. I'm not sure what he does as a returner. To me, I mean, the Titans' return game has just been so inefficient for years that my thing is just, like, find someone that can fair catch the ball, honestly.
And that's progress. So. Yeah, that's funny. Well, yeah, man, those are all great points. Folks, this is what you have right here in front of you, right? James Foster, No Flags Film. Definitely make sure you're following him on Twitter and any other platform. He also contributes to Broadway Sports. Man, I appreciate you coming on. We're going to do this again in the future, and definitely we'll look out for your package of evaluations and Patreon. What's your Patreon? How can they find you there?
Yeah, everything that I'm on is just No Flags Film. Patreon is No Flags Film. I've got a film library, and I'm working on my draft guide, which is going to have write-ups on all the prospects. Twitter, No Flags Film, and YouTube, No Flags Film.
There you have it right there. James, I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
What are we?
What?
I need it. Them strings. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Back from the break. Talking with TD. Uh-oh. The music's fading. The lights are dimming. And now, starting for your Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, no.
At shooting guard, number three, Sidel Three.
How you out of music, man?
And yeah.
Starting at tight end for your Tennessee Titans.
Ooh.
Algie Toppler.
Hey, yo, man. Stop the music. Have you seen Algie Crumpler lately, though?
Dude, he is about four bills.
Yo.
he been sending, no disrespect, but he been in Waffle House quite a bit, boss.
Yo, but I.
He's like, give me another one that's special. But you had five. Give me another one.
You know what I would do to threaten him to not have another one? I'd be like, I'm going to call Brian Dawkins on you. Anytime I think of Algie Crumpler, I think of that hit that Brian Dawkins laid on him in that NFC Championship game. Ooh. Oh, my Lord.
He almost took his spleen out.
Yeah.
I mean, he has no spleen right now.
Almost took out the whole core.
Yeah. How you doing, man? You still sad about the Tennessee Titans, man, and no football's going on this week?
Yeah, you know what I'm sad about, man? That trip to Vegas. I mean, to L.A. That
I know,
just isn't happening.
Going, man.
That's what I, you know, that's what I was looking forward to. But it is what it is. Man, here we are. Yeah. But you know what, though?
Yeah.
I mean, like, we started on a joking mood, but there's, like, a serious matter that we
Absolutely.
Need to address. And I think with this Brian Flores news,
man, it's sad.
I think even looking at David Culley, you know, looking at Hugh Jackson,
yeah.
You know, Hugh Jackson came out and said that he was offered money to tank as well, you know, and there are documents, you know, to back that up. So that's an interesting thing. You look at David Culley. I mean, they brought the guy. Like, what chance did what chance did he really have?
Zero.
I don't think he had one. And then Brian Flores, the whole situation. I mean, I couldn't imagine having somebody accidentally tell me that somebody else got the job I'm about to interview for. I'm like, yo, what am I interviewing for it for? So I guess just to start it off, what is your take on this? I mean, as a former, you know, someone that's been in this arena, what is your input? Like, what do you think when you see this?
You know what's so sad? Because especially as a coach, we preach to the players about integrity. We preach to our players about doing the right thing. But then behind the scenes, you get to act a different kind of way. I mean, it's just very disappointing. I want to be careful because I want to make sure that, you know, because every coach is not like that. Every coach doesn't do those things or say those things or handles it in that manner. But there's kind of two things that I'm kind of upset about. And listen, I don't want to make this a black and white thing. We're going against each other. I don't want to be like that. I want us to learn to where we can change the heart of the people that's making those decisions and make it right. So it's kind of like two things I want to really talk about. Number one is the B-Enemy. Why isn't B-Enemy have a job yet? Why? I don't understand.
He doesn't call the plays. That's what they say.
Are you serious? Name the top three offensive coordinators right now. He's got to be number one, two, or three.
Yep, I would put Byron Leftwich in there as well.
Yeah, and then I want to say another thing too is Mike Tomlin. How in the world can you even think about firing this guy when he has 15 straight winning seasons? He's 143-92.
That's an NFL record, 15 straight.
Yeah. And I want to be careful when I say this, and I say this with all respect, that Arthur Smith for the Tennessee Titans, I mean, real careful when I say this because I love my organization, love everything about it, but he called 1 year a great season, and he automatically gets a job, which he was qualified to get because he's that kind of coach, and I think he's a phenomenal coach. But the enemy's been doing this for years, and he's still the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? We talk about stuff like, well, you know, erase the racism on the field and have little bumper stickers that, you know, we care about our players. But do you really? Do you really care about the player? Because if you really care about the players, then you're going to do things to take care of the players. You wouldn't have this kind of stuff, you know, about, you know, that's actually going on. It just breaks my heart, man, that we're still dealing with this. It's kind of like this. It's kind of like a woman putting on makeup. She puts on makeup because it covers the blemishes on her face. And I'm saying this respectful. I'm just making an illustration. But when you take the makeup off, whatever's on your face is still there. That's exactly what's happening in the NFL is we're trying to cover it up with little slogans. We're covering it up with little things on the field. But then when we take the makeup off, the racism is still there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I think that even boils over to evaluating quarterbacks, man. Before I get to that, though, let's sure. talk about these networks, though.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really interesting how you see the Bengals OC, right? They called the screen to P. Ryan.
Right.
Solid play call. Yeah. Never mind the fact that the guy caught the ball and outran everybody to the end zone. So I wouldn't call it like, you know, some type of groundbreaking play call. But what do? They show the OC in the box more than they show the player. You know what I mean? But then you see the Chiefs do something, right? You see Travis Kelce make that catch, right? They did an excellent job of putting that linebacker in conflict, right? Because you had 3-by-1 Kelce on the backside. Right. You had that inside seam, and then you had him bending that skinny post. And the linebacker was like, okay, what do I do, right? And they don't show Eric Bieniemy or anything like that. So I think you also have to look at the way this game is covered and put in front of fans. And there's a lot of conditioning there.
It's just that what are we doing, TD? I mean, we listen, if I'm an owner of a team, I don't care if a guy is orange. If you're qualified for the job, you're going to get it. But guess how many African-American coaches are in the NFL? One. That's 3%. So that's 1 out of 32 teams. You know, when you say we want to make everything equal, we want to make everything right. You know, I remember I had a coach. His name was he was a running back coach for the Tennessee Titans. It was Sherman Smith. He would always say this. He said, "Don't be about it. Don't talk about it. Be about it." But what's happening in the NFL is we're talking about it, but we're not being about it because you know behind closed doors that's where the real talk is. And we gotta listen. We don't want to make this us against them. I mean, I'm African-American guy, but I don't want to make this us against them because that's not how we're going to make progress. Let's sit down at the table. Let's break bread. Let's sit down and say, you know what, okay, how can we make this better? It's not just having an African-American coach in that position. It's about having a qualified person in that position. It doesn't matter what ethnicity is. It's about doing the right thing, TD, and I think that, you know, everything has been covered up until somebody says something. I mean, listen, we're going to talk about this Flores thing for about a year. But then when the ball's kicked off, are we going to talk about it anymore? Absolutely not.
And that's the tough part of it. That's the tough part of it. It'll be a thorn in the side for a bit, and then it'll be just brushed to the side. Yeah. And that's the bad part.
Yeah.
One of the other things what I was going to get to is just, you know, the quarterback evaluation. And just how that goes, you know, you look at Ryan Tannehill. I couldn't imagine if Lamar Jackson had to say like, there would be a lot of HELL to pay. But I mean, let's look at Ryan Tannehill. This is what is in front of us. This is a guy I believe. Doesn't matter what I believe. Mike Vrabel said that you know everyone has to play great around him. So that, I mean, that's he's telling you, okay, look, he may not be that guy, but we need everybody who is that guy to help him be that guy. So in other words, collectively, they have to go get it. He's admitting that they don't have the Josh Allen, the Joe Burrow, the Patrick Mahomes, the Deshaun Watson, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady, the Lamar Jackson. What do you make of Ryan Tannehill?
You know what? I still believe in Ryan Tannehill, and the reason why I say I believe in him is because he's done it before. I mean, if you look at last year, he had 33 TDs, 6 interceptions, and a QB rating of 106. 2019, he took a 2-14, you know, and took it to the AFC Championship game, and they were this close to making it. But then on the flip side, and I was listening to what Vrabel said. He said we got to be great around him. Okay, they got A.J. Brown, they got Julio Jones, but let's take it back in 2019. Who did he have around him to make plays? He had Raymond. He had what's the other the receiver that came from the Jets? I can't remember his name.
Oh, Corey Davis.
No. The other one. His wife was an actor
from the Jets.
He came. He only came in for a year. I can't remember, but he caught the touchdown against the Kansas City Chiefs to take the lead.
Eric Decker.
Oh, you're talking about the okay. This you're talking. Okay, yeah. You're going back a little bit. Yeah.
Back a little bit. Eric Decker. I'm sorry, Eric Decker. I mean, look at what happened when they were in the Baltimore game. Raymond catches a bomb for a touchdown to basically beat the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason what I'm saying is, TD, even though he had a terrible year this year, I just think that if he just gets back his confidence, you said it earlier in the season, TD, that if he just gets that cockiness, that nastiness, mm-hmm. say, you know what? Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, in 2019 when he had to have nine game-winning drives, he would turn that hat back and say, let's go get this thing. If he does the same thing this year with these weapons and go get a tight end that's a stinking dog, I believe that this Tennessee Titans can go to the Super Bowl. Don't go. I think sometimes we get afraid and we get mad at the moment. Oh, it's terrible. I understand they blew an opportunity. I understand that this was they had everything around. I understand we had the best defense. But when you start blowing up stuff, you're going to blow up the whole team and you're going to be right back where you were before.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing, and I've always maintained this, that Ryan Tannehill is a game manager. And mm-hmm. I say that with respect.
Absolutely.
And anytime I say that, the very next sentence is Tom Brady was a game manager to start his career and absolutely. A multiple Super Bowl champion at that. So my thing is this, and when I wrote that post about the Titans hitting their ceiling with Ryan Tannehill and it's not the Super Bowl, if this Ryan Tannehill that we saw this year continues to exist, I don't believe they could go to a Super Bowl unless they just really, really make some crazy changes. Now, here's the thing. What really confuses me and has me on the fence, this year he threw more interceptions than the last 2 years combined.
Right.
And this is a year where you didn't have, and I'm not making excuses. I'm just looking at the full situation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have A.J. Brown, who look at any top quarterback, like they had a guy. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has Devontae Adams, right?
Absolutely.
Derek Carr has, now is little Hunter Renfro, but you also say Darren Waller. Patrick Mahomes has Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Ryan Tannehill has A.J. Brown. He was out for a good, three, four games?
Yep, and Julio.
And Julio was out, and Derrick Henry was out. So what I really wonder is I sit down and think of all this. Okay, was he pressing to make plays that just weren't there, resulting in turnovers? That's the thing that I wonder.
You know, TD, thank you for saying that, because it's a different type of pressure. When he was sitting behind Mariota, and he was 2-4, he had nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a gunslinger. But now when you have pressure to be the guy as opposed to, you know, putting it on anybody else, it's kind of hard. Some people struggle with that. But when you're confident in what you know, I mean, look at his body language, TD, in 2019. Look at his body language in 2020, and look at his body language now. You have his body language was like, man, I'm about to go out and win the game. And we knew he was going to win it.
Yep.
But then his body language this year was like, man, I don't know. But if he can get back to that guy that you're talking about with that slight cockiness to be, I mean, even when the game was on the line, he had a smirk on his face because he knew.
Yeah.
You remember when they played, I think it was, when they went 2-4 the year when they played
The
Kansas City Chiefs at home.
Yeah.
The
Adam Humphries.
Yes, sir. When he runs through that safety's lips for that two-point conversion.
Oh, yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
And they said it. They were like, whoa. Because they said it in the huddle. They were like, whoa. Like, no, we're not going to lose because this dude he's on one.
Did you see the defense go bananas? Did you see the fans go bananas?
Mm-hmm.
So if we – listen, I don't mean to prolong this thing, but if you get that cat back with this defense – with those receivers and, you know, get a couple of guys, a couple of tight ends, come on, man. You can make another deep run in this playoffs or go to the Super Bowl.
So you're of the school, don't blow it up.
No, trust the process, man. Can I say one little thing and I'll be quiet? What if the Patriots would have jumped ship from Brady and just kept on with Bledsoe? We would never have known Brady. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They trust the process to say, you know what? I believe in Brady. I may not know what he can do now. I don't know. Now this guy's not one of the best players, but the best player of all time.
Yeah. I'm on the fence. I think they should move on with this guy though. All right, move on. Not move on from him. Move on with him. I think you give it this year. I find some way. You just watch the board, you know, and just keep Desmond Ridder on your mind and watch the board. I draft Desmond Ridder, and I may not take him first round. If I see that he drops, I mean, other high-quality quarterbacks, Colin Kaepernick, Derek Carr, you know, they went in the second round, you know. But I really watched that guy. That's the guy I put my eye on. And, okay, look, we do what we can to get him. And this is – I'm saying we like as if I'm the general manager. So let me just make sure that, you know, that's clear. So
right.
I'm going to correct it. If they do what they can to get him, mm-hmm. now you have a guy that he's ready to play now. Mm-hmm. You probably don't want him to play yet. You want him to kind of marinate a bit and see things and learn the scheme and be able to come in with a confident background there.
Yep.
But I think you look at, okay, listen, 2022, this is the year. We're going to make a run for it. We're going to make, and that's the way I would look at it. Yeah. That's the way I would look at it. And okay, it falls apart. It's proven that this guy is not that dude that we need. Okay, we have our fallback option in Ridder.
Absolutely.
I think that's the way you have to approach that. I'm not really of the school, hey, just go and trade for Russell Wilson.
Come on.
You know, I Russell Wilson's a clear upgrade. But first off, you need Seattle to want to come off of that. Yeah, and then you need him to want to come here.
Do you think Sierra was going to come here?
I don't know, man. Nashville's a pretty good music area.
I know,
man.
But, you know, yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, that's just my thought process. I think you go with what you have right now.
I think so, too.
Man. It seems like that's the approach they're going to take.
I mean, because I understand the frustration of the fans, TD, but people got to understand, trust the process. It's kind of like making soup. When you add the right ingredients, you got to put it under the fire. And once you put it under the fire and cook it, it tastes good. So what they got to do is let this fire simmer, the soup, and then when everybody tastes it, it's going to taste good. And what's going to taste good? A Super Bowl. But if you start jumping ship and, you know, shipping, Tannehill somewhere else and putting a new guy in, it can mess up the chemistry and they're going to be like, whoa, what did we just do?
Yeah. Well, there you have it. We dug in. Our folks,
like Sidney Moncrief.
This is what we do. Like, yeah, Sidney Moncrief and Ricky Pierce. Or you could be Jack Sigma. I guess that's Elijah, Jack Sigma, just with the they straightened out the fro and made it.
Boy, you a fool, man.
But the shorts are even shorter.
Yeah, right? Well, hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. We'll continue to do this week after week.
Appreciate you.
All right.
All right, my man.
So that was Chris Sanders. Always appreciate the in-depth conversation that he brings. You know, we had to get into it. There's a lot to talk about. I know you folks are back and forth on Ryan Tannehill. I am too. And we'll just see what happens. But I think in the end, what we talked about today is the right course of action. Also, can't forget James Foster at No Flags Film. Make sure you check him out. No Flags Film on all platforms. Excellent, excellent work. So shout out to James for coming on. And last of all, shout out to Elijah for making this thing happen. This show just gets easier and easier to do, and I appreciate that. And I appreciate each of you. So I'm going to shout each of you out for listening, tuning in. Make sure you check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Talking With TD. Rate, review. We appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night. We'll be right back.